Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Here on this Monday morning, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Every day, every Monday at this time, we say hello, and we talk with TD, Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. He covers the Titans. Also, Talking with TD is his podcast that drops on Wednesdays that you can hear on this station, and also Friday nights during the 6 o'clock hour, Nate and TD, which is former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington. Teron, we had a lot of things to talk about last week with the moves the general manager made, some big cuts in the middle of the week leading up to a big game. And when you think about replacing a long snapper, a punter, and a holder, that could have spelled trouble, but it didn't play out that way on Sundays. I thought those guys did their role. What did you think?
Yeah, I think they did their role. It was a good job of bringing in some guys that have done it before. Ryan Allen actually worked with Stephen Goskowski before, so that helped. And they did a good job. Some really good punts by Ryan Allen, that's for sure.
Yeah. I feel like every week now, and I think probably in most NFL markets, they probably have these same discussions on their airwaves because of COVID and injuries, and it's just a different year. But it's just weird to, you know, watch your team that you cover and it's in your market every week and say, who the heck is that? And this week's candidate, Breon Borders. I was like, who the heck is that? He played 100% of the snaps.
Yeah, I mean, he not only played 100% of the snaps, he played well.
Yeah.
He tackled Jimmy Graham one-on-one in the flat. He had pretty solid coverage against Darnell Mooney a few times. I think he did a really good job, and he just stepped up. And that's what they needed out of that cornerback position opposite Malcolm Butler. And I would like to take a moment just to, you know, bring some attention to Malcolm Butler and what he's done. He had a very, very good stretch of games going one-on-one against Chase Claypool, one reception for negative yards, going one-on-one against A.J. Green, two receptions for 5 yards, and then Allen Robinson, 6 for 70. Not all 70 of that was against Butler, but, you know, he played a really good game against a big-time receiver, so you got to shout him out too. But, yeah, Borders played really well. And it, like I said, it's the type of play that they needed from that cornerback position.
Has he been their best corner all year?
Oh, without a doubt. I don't even think there's a conversation to be had about that. He's playing really good football. And obviously there was one, it was against the Texans, where there was a miscommunication and they gave up a long touchdown. But for the most part, he's played really good. And I think it's something that, you know, is great to see, you know, for a guy who struggled initially. And I asked him last week just what was going on and what he is finding, you know, to play so well. And he said he owed it to the city of Nashville and he owed it to his teammates and to the fans. I thought that was really cool that he mentioned that.
Hmm. What did you think of the newcomer, Desmond Keane, who had to basically, as you said, introduce himself to his teammates Sunday morning before kickoff?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny how, you know, you saw him out there introducing himself to guys like Khalif Raymond and a few others. I guess he didn't get to introduce himself to some of the guys on Saturday. Fortunately for him, he had already known some of the guys as well, went to college with Amani Hooker for a year, trained with Malcolm Butler. You know, so that was a good transition for him. I think he did a good job, gave up one play. Anthony Miller was like a 20-something yard reception. But for the most part, his coverage was really good. He was Johnny on the spot for the fumble return. Another guy that you got to shout out, Jeffrey Simmons, for what he did, you know, forced the fumble.
Man.
And then King picked it up and returned it. But I think he really helped out in that secondary, especially covering Anthony Miller for the most part. So it was another thing that was good to see, just a guy come in and play with a lot of energy and be excited about getting a new beginning, and you saw it.
Big Jeff is the real deal. My goodness. He is, I mean, I know He had a rough go at it here. I think it was maybe the Pittsburgh game, but he is by far their biggest disruptor on defense. Something we were having fun with in the last hour that maybe you can lend a little insight into. We were trying to figure out, how did Desmond Kean have a choreographed touchdown dance with his teammates that he hadn't seen until Saturday? He'd just been on Zoom calls. How did they have a touchdown dance when he scored?
Yeah, it seemed like something that just kind of came together really, really fast. And going back and watching it, because you saw some of the guys just kind of jump into the pile and do what they did. It seemed like it. Like I said, it was something that they put together on the fly, but it worked out.
Talking to Teron Davenport. Teron, we were just kicking. This is another thing we kicked around. We'd love to get your insight on it. Derrick Henry right now, after leading the league last year with 303 carries, is at 182 halfway through. So he's on pace for a little more of a workload, which you want to think big picture here. And you can tell that they are, because they are working hard to get McNichols and Foreman some carries in there. And one of the examples that I'd like to point out is they're up 24-3. They give up a touchdown. They get the ball back. It's 24-10. And they go with Foreman for two carries, McNichol for a carry, in a deal where I can think back to some games where it would be easy to say, okay, here's our closer. This is where Henry's going to break the big one and completely end of story. But they felt like they had the game won. They didn't use him, right? So he ends up with 21 carries. They've actually dialed it back a little bit. So what's your thought? Through the midway point, do you feel like he's still got plenty in the tank to have the big finish that we've come to count on the last couple of years?
Yeah, I don't think it's any discussion whether or not he has a lot left, because he has plenty left in the tank. Mike Vrabel touched on it a little bit after the game and saying that you want to be aware of each player's workload, knowing they're going to turn around and go against a Colts defense that is number two in the league, or they're top three. I think they're number two, but regardless, they're in the top of the league in run defense. So it's going to be a physical game. It's one of those primetime games where Derrick Henry tends to rise to the occasion. So I think it was wise to manage his carries in this game and give Foreman and McNichols some carries. I think eventually you're going to see that rushing attack morph into a three-headed monster, but still featuring Derrick Henry. And it's, like I said, it's a wise decision for Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith and Tony Dews to do what they did and scaling back carries where it wasn't absolutely necessary for him to carry the football. Like you said, the game was wrapped up, and they just had to run the clock down a little bit, and that's what they did with Foreman.
And you've watched long enough that you can cite examples of teams that did not think as much big picture when they had the horse, right? And they wore out the engine, because it doesn't happen in any particular one game, right? If you look historically, all of a sudden the guy's not the same guy anymore, and you say, well, what happened? Then you look back and you say, well, look at all of the workload here. And now we have, this is where analytics and history can show that if you overwork the guy, it will take its toll at some point. I think it's a good thing that we're looking at this, because he's still going to have the most carries he's ever had. If he stays healthy, he's going to blow by that 303, I think. And remember, he had, in addition to the 303, he had the three playoff games where he was tremendous, but that's more workload. So This is a very important big picture question for them.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a couple guys you could look at, and I don't even think analytics comes into play. Honestly, I don't want to credit analytics for that one. It's just
it's common, sense, right? But some people had not had some common sense in the past, right? With the Earl Campbells and
a couple of examples. I mean, you look at the Chiefs with Larry Johnson.
Great example.
You know, he had buku carries back to back seasons, and then he just gradually, over a two-year period, just fell off the planet. I think another guy that's a really good example is Sean Alexander, who quietly had one of the best seasons ever for a running back, and he had 300-plus carries and, you know, set records for touchdowns in a season, and he eventually fell off as well. And coincidentally, Eddie George is another guy that you can mention, not necessarily a sudden fall off, but a gradual one. But coincidentally, Derrick Henry talks to both of these guys almost every day, and I talked to Eddie recently about that, just that managing that workload, and he said it is tough, but you know, you just have to continue to have that mindset of you're not going to be the one getting punished. You're going to do the punishing. And over time, though, that starts to pile up. So I really think that it's something that they have to be wary of and just understand that, you know, you can't use him too much. You know, like the Bill Withers song, you know, use me up. You can't do it too much. You have to, scale it back some when necessary. And they did that yesterday.
Yeah, so keep in mind, 370 carries is the danger zone, and he's on pace for 364 right now. So we'll see how they manage that in the second half. Teron, I want to ask you about the Bears' defense. I thought they did a good job. That bread and butter that the Titans have just carved up teams with, that play action, the crossing routes to A.J. Brown and to Corey Davis, they hit just enough of them yesterday. They made the big play down the sideline to Brown, but I thought the Bears had a pretty good feel for how to slow the Titans down. How much of that do you think is just, that's a really good defense, and how much of it do you think is a little concern going forward? The Colts and Ravens obviously both have very good defenses.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of the Bears having a really good defense. They still hit that play for a couple big ones, that play action to A.J. Brown. So it was still there, and Corey Davis had an opportunity also. It kind of got up on him a little bit quicker than he probably thought, and it resulted in an incompletion. But I think that play is going to continue to be there because the moment, these guys start to – well, actually, I'm not even going to say the moment. It's just natural for running backs to be able to have that impact. So, you know, linebackers, they're going to naturally – cheat up a little bit, right? Take that step, and that's going to open up just the slightest passing lane, and that's how you see these things happening. So it's just almost instinctive for the guys to play it that way and for it to open up. So I don't think there should be a concern there. You also mentioned that the slot fade that, you know, A.J. Brown was able to have against Buster Skrine, and I think that's something that is really important. I asked AJ about that after the game, and he said that he wanted to show it's really important to put it on film that you can take the top off of defenses, and that's exactly what he did. Got behind the nickel and then as well as the safety and made that catch and high effort to dive into the end zone with a guy, you know, draped on him. So definitely a great job by AJ Brown.
How worried are you about the offensive line? I'm not sure if they have any kind of outlook on Saffold, but they're starting to ask a lot when you start digging into the depth chart that low.
Yeah, I never like to rail on a guy, but, Jahmyr Douglas, he leaves a lot to be desired. I'll put it that way. I would not be too comfortable if I was Ryan Tannehill behind Jahmyr Douglas. And I mean, it just is what it is. Like I said, I don't like to rail on a guy, but I mean, you have to call a spade a spade. And if Saffold isn't out there, it could definitely be a serious problem going against DeForest Buckner and that Colts defensive line. So they'll definitely have to account for that. I would expect to see quick passes if Douglas is out there, because like I said, you have to account for it. You look at the game, you know, Brent Urban had a really good rush on him and got a pretty solid hit on Tannehill. They stunted the one time, and I believe it was 98, I forget his name, but he was able to get a sack. Now that wasn't all on Jahmyr Douglas, it was in the exchange, but still, you know, these are things you have to be wary of.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN, here on Darren Donick and Chase. So I remember last year on Chase and TD, we talked to, I think it was Chuck Smith, about pass rushing. And Harold Landry specifically, his development. He had the sack yesterday. Clowney's out. you know, Landry was somebody that I identified needed to step up, and I felt like he did. But what have you seen out of his development as a pass rusher?
Yeah, I think this last game he did a good job finishing, and he would have had two sacks, but Foles had the intentional grounding. It just has to continue to happen, right? And you know, as far as the development, I see an inside move starting to come into play for him, but he still just has to continue to do what he's always done, and that show that bend coming off the edge. And it's just a matter of finishing when you have the opportunity. There have been a bit too many times where he was there and he didn't bring the quarterback down. And that goes for pretty much everybody across the front. So it's not just Harold Landry. It's something that collectively they have to get better at. And I'm not exactly sure how you do that, but that is something that they have to find a way to improve.
Do you feel like that even though, you know, the offensive line wasn't great for Chicago, the offense as a whole wasn't great, but three sacks on the day is certainly that confidence build that maybe they've been looking for, and if Clowney is available and can be, you know, be more than he has been, I mean, is this the starting point for the second half of the season where maybe the Titans do have some semblance of a pass rush?
Yeah, you definitely have to hang your hat on that and be confident after that performance, because end of the day, you can only play who's in front of you. So whether that's a third team guard or a center playing tackle, whatever it should be, all you could do is beat the man in front of you. And that's what they did for the most part consistently. And I think it is something that they could build on moving forward. Now, this Colts, the offensive line is they're a good one. I'm actually, for Whiteboard Wednesday, I'm going to draw up a couple of things that I think they're going to need to go to just to get that pass rush. But you also have to give them credit for getting pressure on Foles with the safeties. You saw Kevin Byard drop down and then come off of the edge and pressure Foles on a third down. Vaccaro, they sent him a few times. So you're seeing that. Maybe not get a sack, but it's causing an errant throw that will get the defense off the field on third down. So we know that's an issue that they definitely have to improve upon. So it's not just the sacks. I think collectively they have something to build on after watching what they did yesterday. And, you know, they just have to move forward.
Okay, this may be silly, but, you know, some of the drops yesterday on offense – Your guy Sticky Fingers had a couple, which usually doesn't happen. It gets right to him. Do you think some of that does? I know I've heard Tannehill throws it hard. He's obviously been on the team for over a year. They're used to him by now. But is that still a factor sometimes for a receiver and a quarterback getting on the same page?
Well, I mean, the timing is always something that you want to improve upon and have right. The drop that I think of for Ferguson, now he may have had more than this one, but the only one that I remember is it was on third and six, and he and Corey Davis had kind of a switch release, and he ran an in-breaking route, and Eddie Jackson was kind of on him, and he wasn't able to pull it in for the first down. That was in the first quarter. Was there another one after that?
I don't think so. I think he was only credited for one drop. There was the one, that big play that he had a chance to make, but it was actually a great defensive play. If you take a look, it was broken up. You remember that one, Teron, late, where they threw it deep to him. The guy actually comes in there and makes a great defensive play. That was not a drop.
Right. I called that. It's not a drop. So he just had the one.
So, look, it's going to happen. You know, Corey Davis had one that I mentioned that kind of got up on him. But then, you know, later in the game, Danny Trevathan had a really good play. He poked it out, and it was not possible. Well, not it made it more difficult for Davis to make the catch. So I don't think those drops were necessarily timing, or the one drop by Ferguson and the one by Davis. I don't think it was timing. I think it was just a bang-bang play, I guess you could call it. Like I said, the Davis, his one got up on him a little faster, it looked like, than he had thought. And that tends to, you can usually tell that for like a guy that typically catches the ball with their hands, when it gets on their body, you could tell that, oh, wait, they kind of, it got on them a little bit quicker than normal, because that's why it hits their body. But it's just something, hey, you know, it's another thing that they could watch and look at and say, hey, I got to do better next time. But I think overall, especially against that defense, I think they did a solid job.
Teron Davenport covers the Titans for ESPN, their NFL Nation reporter. TD, we appreciate it as always. It's a short week, so talking with TD coming up Wednesday. You got a game plan yet?
Yeah, I'm going to have Mike Wells on. We'll continue with the NFL Nation reporter coming on. So that's the game plan. And like always, Elijah and I will talk shop. We'll blow the whistle. I don't know what I'm going to call out this week. Last week it was the officials. We'll see this week. But, yeah, like always, you know, it's going to be a great show.
Awesome. Can't wait to take a listen to that. Teron Davenport, appreciate it as always.
Yeah, for sure, man. You guys take it easy.
When we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we'll get more into this Titans game. 6-2 on the year, 615-737-1025. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.